Hello and happy Friday. Welcome to Up to Date from WVIA News. I'm Sarah Cinto, here to get you up to date with what we're doing here at WVIA. We hope we can send you into the weekend with some of our most interesting and important stories. Today, a nonprofit is helping Congolese refugees in Scranton. The leader of an art theft ring is sentenced to prison. And a group representing rural Pennsylvania wants Penn State to consider the impact of closing down some campuses. It's finally Friday, March 14th. Let's get you up to date. The leader of a 20-year art and memorabilia theft ring that operated out of Lackawanna County could spend 8 years in prison. A federal judge sentenced Thomas Trotta on Thursday. WVIA's Boris Krauchniuk has more from the courtroom.
In 20 years as a thief, Tommy Trotta stole baseball Hall of Famer Christy Mathewson's jersey and player contracts from Keystone College. He stole an unauthenticated Jackson Pollock painting and a real Andy Warhol painting from the Everhart Museum in Scranton. He stole a Tiffany lamp from the Lackawanna Historical Society in Scranton and famous Honesdale professional golfer Art Wall Jr.'s trophies from the Country Club of Scranton. They were just the local jobs. There were 20 in all across the country that federal prosecutors charged him with, one as far away as North Dakota. Trotta told the judge he considers himself a scumbag. He apologized to victims gathered in the courtroom and said he hoped they could forgive him someday. The victims weren't having it. Haley Zale said Trotta's theft of her great-uncle Tony Zale's middleweight boxing championship belts sent her into a depression. She endured online insults from boxing fans who berated her for continually bringing up the theft and embarrassing the Boxing Hall of Fame. Judge Malachy Mannion wasn't very sympathetic either. He ripped the thief for showing up on 60 Minutes to talk about the thefts while he awaited sentencing. Mannion said he was flabbergasted by that. The judge sent Trotta to jail for 8 years and ordered him to pay $2.7 million in restitution, although the judge said he knows Trotta won't be able to pay it. Reporting from the federal courthouse in Scranton, I'm Boris Krauchniuk, WVIA News.
Thanks, Boris, for that update. Now, if you listen to WVIA Radio on Fridays, you might have heard this one before. Every week, WVIA's Lisa Mazzarella highlights the work of nonprofit organizations all over Northeast and Central Pennsylvania. Let's see where she is this week.
Our community connection introduces us to the Congolese community of Scranton, a nonprofit organization dedicated to help Congolese refugees adapt to new life in northeastern Pennsylvania. President Ushu Mukelo explains.
Many of our families come from refugee camps all across African states bordering the Congo. We're fleeing atrocities, war crimes, and all kinds of things that have been happening in the eastern part of the country. Thanks to the U.S. Refugee Admissions Program, USRAP, we're able to get to the United States after many years of living in refugee camps, but also many years of going through the resettlement process. But coming to the States from a refugee camp and bringing them over, you go through scrutiny to make sure that you're safe, multiple interviews, medical checkups, and then a little bit of a wait time to also be granted a visa.
You were just talking about fleeing from atrocities and being in refugee camps, and now you are in Scranton, Pennsylvania. That's a big switch. So tell me how you adapted to that switch.
It's been the work of a lot of very good people. Catholic Social Services of the Diocese of Scranton, which is our primary organization that receives us here, but specifically Bob Kelly. The staff at the Scranton Area Foundation was very helpful. And the objective is to make sure that families, regardless of the differences, are able to transition and become useful part of the U.S. citizenry. What we're doing is making sure that we design programs that are geared towards helping the families becoming self-sufficient. We are a community that actually values being able to survive on our own.
So tell me how that transition is with some of the people in the Congolese community in Scranton.
Yeah, very good question. The primary reason why they left the country of birth is war. So there is an issue of mental health. Many of the women who have also gone through these atrocities, including all kinds of sexual and gender-based violence, they need help. People are so much hindered to develop and do things they want because they're not able to express themselves as a result of not being able to speak English, applying for public assistance, renewing benefits. To an extent, people also still feel lonely. They left family, friends. They are people they've known for a very long time who are still stuck in refugee camps.
Ornella Akimana, you are the executive secretary of this nonprofit organization. How did you make the adjustment to your new life and a new culture?
It was difficult. I came by myself. When I came here, he became a brother to me. I started with ESL classes. I went for the GED, and now I'm working. It's very scary when you come to a country you don't know anyone, especially when you're a woman. It's not easy because everyone trying to take advantage of you. Yeah, it was hard. There was a sleepless night, tears sometimes. It was hard.
So when you see a new group of people coming in and they are terrified and they don't really have a place to stay and maybe language is a difficult thing, you're able to go back to the days that you came here, yes?
Yeah, it's about stories. So that's when the story comes. They just see you right now, but they don't know what you went through, you know, to get where you are right now. Tell them everything is possible and you'll be fine.
There is a Kinyarwanda saying, which I like so much, Agahugu gatayo mucho karachika, that a country that drops its cultures will split. What we are prioritizing is transition, but we also want people to know they're Africans and continue to keep their cultures.
Very special thanks to Ushu Mukelo of the Congolese community of Scranton and Ornella Akimana, who shared her story with us today. Hear the entire conversation on our podcast, wvia.org/communityconnection. I'm Lisa Mazzarella.
More up to date after this break. At WVIA News, we're committed to bringing you in-depth, fact-based reporting that matters. But we can't do it without you. Your support helps us tell the stories that shape our region. Join us in keeping local journalism strong. Donate today at wvia.org. Welcome back to Up to Date. It's been a few weeks since Penn State announced it will consider closing some of its regional campuses. Now, Penn State's administration is sharing more details on how it will determine which of its campuses to close. As Sydney Roach reports for WVIA, the Center for Rural Pennsylvania is urging the university's leadership to consider long-term community impacts.
Kyle Kopko is the executive director of the Center for Rural Pennsylvania, a bipartisan legislative agency to support rural Pennsylvania. Kopko says the center has been advising the university about many issues, including the recent announcement that it's considering closing some of its Commonwealth campuses.
I strongly recommend that it's just not an evaluation of student enrollment trends, that it also take into account how significant of an economic impact a closure would have on a community.
The Penn State administration says it will consider several factors, including enrollment numbers, graduation rates, and population projections when deciding which campuses to close. Kopko wants the administration to also consider long-term impacts in those communities.
Just because a campus closes, that doesn't mean that real estate is going away. It still has to be maintained. Workers who are displaced will have to find other means for employment.
An administrative advisory committee will make campus closure recommendations by the end of this semester. In State College, I'm Sydney Roach.
There are three campuses in our region that could close: Scranton, Wilkes-Barre, and Hazleton. We have more on that also at WVIA.org. Now, in case you didn't realize at the top of the show, today is Friday. And before we head into the weekend, let's take a look back at This Week in History with Director of Journalism, Julie Sidoni.
This Week in History, a brief look at some of the biggest happenings here at home and around the world, March 10th through the 16th, 1843. This is the week Carbon County is first formed out of what had been parts of Monroe and Northampton counties. 1876, speech is transmitted by telephone when Alexander Graham Bell calls for his assistant in the next room. 1933, it's the week a newly inaugurated President Franklin D. Roosevelt gives his first national radio address, broadcast directly from the White House. He'd give many, and they'd come to be known as the Fireside Chats. In 2011, this is the week of the largest ever recorded earthquake in Japan. It leads to, among other things, the Fukushima nuclear disaster. And 2020, this is the week Broadway goes dark after New York leaders put COVID restrictions on large gatherings. It means the loss of billions of tourist dollars. That's This Week in History. I'm Julie Sidoni, WVIA News.
I hope you're feeling up to date. We'll be back on Monday, but keep your eyes on WVIA.org. News does not stop over the weekend, after all. I'm Sarah Cinto. Thanks for hanging out with me here on Up to Date. If you like what you're hearing, remember to subscribe and listen every weekday wherever you like to get your podcasts, or right at WVIA.org. And while you're there, might as well subscribe to the WVIA News Notes newsletter, too. You'll get all the local stories you need to know about right to your inbox every Tuesday and Friday morning. Have a great weekend. I'll catch you Monday here on Up to Date.